usually I say good morning because I go to the morning meetings, but good evening. My name's Kim. I'm an alcoholic. And like you said, I have 12 years today. And, you know, when Bill asked me to share at this meeting several months ago, I said, yeah, sure, no problem. And I didn't realize I was going to be sharing shortly after my father passed. So I'm going to try not to get emotional, but today has been usually, you know, when I'm celebrating a birthday, usually that day is just an incredible day for me. And today has been somewhat of a rough day because usually my dad would be the first one that would be calling to wish me, you know, a happy birthday. You know, I always refer to my belly button birthday is my belly burn birthday, and somebody asked me last week, well, what is that, you know, because I, you know, I have two birthdays, and I also celebrate belly button birthday with my dad, so and that's going to be next month, so, you know, it's an emotional time for me, so like I said, I'm going to try not to tear up, but there's probably a good chance that I will. My home group is the ABC group, and I have been going to that group since day one when I moved to Visalia in 2006. We used to live up past Sacramento in the Lincoln Roseville area, if you're familiar with that, and that's where I attended my first meeting. And when I attended my first meeting, I drove up to the meeting, and I was not driving. I was not going to that meeting for myself. I was going for that meeting, to that meeting for my family, for my husband. I used to carry a card, not a court card. I used to carry a husband card because he wanted proof that I was going to meetings. And when I went to that first meeting, it was a book study meeting. I had no idea what that book study was. I drove up there, and everybody is standing outside the door, and it was like a business complex. And I was miserable inside. I was crawling in my own skin. I didn't want to be there. I was forced to be there. Drove up and looked at everybody, and they're standing outside still. Meeting hadn't started yet, and they're laughing, and they're smoking cigarettes, majority of them, and they were drinking coffee, I would assume, out of a coffee cup. I would have been drinking coffee. I would have been drinking something else out of the coffee cup. And I had nothing in common with those people. I didn't smoke, I don't drink coffee, and I sure was not in hell laughing. Like I said, I was miserable in my own skin. Everybody went inside, and so I proceeded to go in. First thing I noticed when I walked in was a pamphlet rack right by that door. And I grabbed a pamphlet, and that was my proof that I went to a meeting. Got that pamphlet. I have no idea what pamphlet I grabbed. And I turned around and I left. So I still didn't know what a book study was. And I played that game for quite some time. Obviously, I didn't want to be there. You know, I was backing up, but I just thought that would be a good way of starting. That was my first meeting I attended, but I didn't really attend it. And so obviously I kept on drinking. I was hospitalized twice because my pancreas was failing because of the drinking. I was ICU. My daughter at the time was graduating. My oldest was graduating from eighth grade, and I was sitting in the ICU room. And I asked the doctor, well, can I just leave for a while? I'll come back, you know. This disease is baffling. You know, I thought I was okay. I wasn't. Backing up my childhood, I had a normal childhood. I grew up with two sisters and a brother. I was the second to the youngest. My sister was the youngest one, then myself, then my brother, and my older sister. My parents had been married 60 years. It would have been 61 years in November. So it, just a normal childhood. I was very involved in sports, and I thought that was my family. I thought, I was comfortable, and until I found my sobriety, that's when I really found what type of group I was comfortable with, So I was very, very involved in, like I said, in sports. And I did that all my life. And so I wasn't a partier. I didn't go to parties really, because I was on the soccer field, Saturday morning, first thing in the morning. I was training all week. In 85, I was on I was an alternate, the national women's team. And that's how serious my sporting was with soccer. And I was a person pleaser. I needed to please everybody. I was always worried about somebody upset at me. And when I got the alcohol in me, I felt at ease. I felt like I couldn't hurt anybody, and I felt like I was myself, and it just got a hold of me. I started drinking, 6 o'clock in the morning. My hands were shaking too bad to sign my girls' papers the night before. I was drinking, so I was too busy, to sign their school papers. And so I signed them the next morning with my hand was shaking, so I had to have a shot. I started like they talked about in the book, changing, your drinking. Well, I went from beer to wine, and then I gained a lot of weight, and I never had a weight issue, because I was playing in sports. And then all of a sudden I seen that Diet Coke and Bacardi commercial, and that was my answer to weight loss, and I was able to still drink. I was a closet drinker. I hid my drink. I hid my bottles. When I was hospitalized in 2005, 2006, my husband brought some clothes to the hospital, and this is when we were still up north. And he opened up the suitcase, and there were 16 big giant bottles of Bacardi. I'll get to it later. That was along with some other things. I'll get to the bills later. I was taking care of the bills. I'll get to that stuff later. Financially, I ruined us for a while because of that. I hid my drinking all the time. I used to have my vodka. Eventually, I drank vodka because I heard, painters drink that because it doesn't smell like alcohol. It's, you're painting. It smells like paint, So I went into vodka. I started drinking vodka then. And I would fill up the water bottle full of vodka. And the only way I knew which was really water or vodka, and I would shake the bottle, and if it was bubbling on top, I realized, okay, that's my vodka. I'm still safe. I have a little bit more, completely hid my drinking and drank and drove every day that I had a sip of alcohol. I was breaking the law. I never got caught. I should have got caught. My drinking, I felt like I didn't have a problem for quite some time, but looking back now, when I was searching and doing my steps, my drinking started a long time ago. I used to snow ski a lot, you have to have something to drink while you're skiing. So I drilled holes in the top of my my handles of my ski pole, and I poured schnapps in my ski poles, and then put a cork on the top, and yeah, I was able to drink and ski, just as long as I would evenly do it, or I would be lopsided at one time, So, looking back, it was, I had a drinking problem for quite a few years, until I admitted it. When I finally admitted to my dad that, my parents mean a lot to me, and as a child, I never wanted to disappoint my parents. And so I talk a lot about my family a lot, and when I finally admitted to my dad that I had a drinking problem, I was standing out in my garage, and I told him, and he says, if you don't get a, and this is like 2004 or 2005, he says, if you don't get a handle on this drinking, Kim, you will completely ruin your life. Your family Ron will divorce you. I'm married. I apologize. I should have said that. Married. My husband and I will be married 28 years in November. And thank you. And he says, Ron will divorce you. The girls aren't going to want anything to do with you. You're going to end up killing somebody. You're going to get arrested. Financially, it's going to ruin you. Everything could have been true, Financially, we were ruined for a while, when we moved here from Lincoln, we moved here because my husband's job. I had stopped working at Hewlett Packard, and I was between jobs, so we decided to make the move when he got a job offer here. And my daughter, my oldest, started a freshman year at Redwood, and my youngest is still in elementary school. And I was playing the rotating game in and out of these rooms, and a couple of you seen me from day one coming in and out. I could say four or five people, in these rooms and in this room. And I went to two rehabs up in Fresno, and then my husband said enough is enough. It was almost a year back to back from one another. And when he finally said enough was enough, we had just moved into our brand new home. I was laying on the carpet in our family, in our bedroom, and his uncle was in recovery, and the phone was up to my ear, and I'm laying on the floor of a brand new home, and he says, Kim, if you don't let God in your life, your life will be ruined. And I was thinking, what the hell does God have to do with my recovery? He has everything to do in my recovery. Finally, I surrendered, and I went to New Visions. And there's only two of us out of 16 girls from New Visions that were not coming from, jail or prison. And second day I was there after the detox, I see this girl with a big suitcase rolling her suitcase across the street from the bus that she just took over to New Vision to check herself into it. And I said, if she could do it, I could do it. Unfortunately, she's back out in her disease, and my way was not working. And I had to do something different. I used to drink before meetings. I used to drink during meetings. I used to drink after meetings. I got kicked out of our home My husband changed the locks on me. He took away, you know, the mail key, the car keys, everything. My husband, my parents are traveling full time in a fifth wheel. They were in Colorado. He called them and said, if you don't hurry up and get here, Kim's going to die. And they came into town, and I started staying with them in a trailer park. I even got out, kicked out of the trailer park. And that's when I finally surrendered in September 25th, actually September 24th. That night, I stayed at my sponsor's house, and after playing the games, you know, I had enough. I was like, you know, the saying is, you know, you're sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was definitely sick and tired. You know, my kids didn't want anything to do with me. My husband said, if you don't go to detox tomorrow, I'm going to go see the lawyer. You know, and why I started, you know, when I started New Visions and I was going through it, I was there for 90 days. Nothing was going to make me drink. I was not going to pick up that bottle. The first drink was going to get me drunk. That's a proven fact for me, that the first drink was going to get me drunk. I had a 48-hour pass, and my husband picked me up from New Visions, came home. He was working out, was going to get ready to go to Cowhide, and my daughter at that time was a sophomore. And I went to go to her friend's house to pick her up, going to take her to the game, and then I was going to go back and pick up my husband at the house with our younger daughter. And we were just about to leave to go to the game, and we got a call from the Visalia police, and my daughter was over in the building over at the stadium with her girlfriend, and they got caught drinking, and she drank vodka out of the water bottle. She learned that from me. So what, you know, it doesn't the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, you know. You know, I thought about writing out what I was going to talk about, and I used to do that in meetings. Before I'd get to the meeting, I thought, you know, okay, what am I going to talk about? The sponsor I used to have said there's three of me. The person that came in, and if there was dead silence, I felt awkward, and I needed to talk. And I was talking about, who knows what I was talking about? I wasn't passing the message. And the second one, after I finally surrendered, because during that time I was drinking, second one was the one that just sat and I listened, and every once in a while I would share. And the third one is, I believe, is who I am today. You know, I try to pass the message. I try to, you know, the saying is, you know, give it away to keep it. I give my chips away every year, because I feel that this is just not a program that I'm the one that keeps myself sober. It's a mixture of many, many things. It's a mixture of the you know, people that have, you know, 24 hours or 8 hours, people that have 40 years. It's a mixture of all different things. It's the big book. It's the sponsorship. It's working the steps. It's being honest, definitely honest with yourself. You know, and I always say it's this is not a me program. It's, you turn the me upside down, it's a we program. You know, so I give my my chips away every year, and the only chip I have is my 8-year chip. But let me back up for a second. When I was 11 months sober, I got a phone call from a friend of mine, and when I was going to get my ear chip, I was going to give it to my girlfriend that I've known since third grade, my daughter's godmother, and I was going to make my amends at that time to her. And I hadn't been in touch with her because I'd been ashamed of my drinking. I had a lot of amends to make to her. And I got a phone call, and she passed away of breast cancer. And I didn't know that she was no longer in remission. And the first thing I did was, it was the middle of the day, and I got down to the Alano Club. You know, that a lot of people say it's just, you know, it's a place where we have meetings. You know, that's my second home, because if I didn't have that building there, I don't think that I would be sober, because that home there provides so many tools for me, between the book studies, the meetings, the fellowship. You know, a lot of things happen in that building. And so I got myself down there, and I remember telling my mom, my dad that night, that if I could get through not drinking because of, you know, from Sarah's, you know, passing, that I know that I'll be able to get through the passing when my parents pass away. And I told my mom that. And I was very involved in my dad's hospice. Unfortunately, I missed his passing by a few minutes because I was picking up my sister from the airport. But my mom reminded me about that, about the, you know, if I could make it through Sarah's passing, I could make it through the passing of my parents. So, you know, I give my chips away every year. I have my my month's chips, but the 24-hour chip through my 11 months. But actually, I don't have my 11 months because I actually buried it at a cemetery for Sarah when she passed away at the 11 months. And I made my amends there to her at that time. So the only chip I have is my 8-year chip. You know, recovery is not always smooth, and you're going to go through those bumps, and you're going to feel like you want to drink, you want to not feel the pain, you know. During my 7 years to leading up to the 8 years, we are going through brain studies for my daughter, my youngest daughter that is now 24, but she was diagnosed with epilepsy when she was 2 years old. And when she was 20 years old, she had two brain surgeries. And I thought, if I could get through that as well, through all the brain studies for a year of going back and forth to San Francisco, and the actual brain, the surgeries itself, I needed a reminder on a daily basis that I'm going to be able to stay sober. I have no desire to stop drinking, but it's just the things that, you know, bad habits you have and so forth that could lead you to drinking. So it reminds me on a daily basis. And, you know, I have that on my keychain. But the rest of them, I give them away. And, you know, you go through really, you make amends to family and friends. You gain friendship, you lose friendship during your recovery. And when I had 8 years, and I lost my friendship and my sister relationship with my youngest sister. And she is also a alcoholic. Bottom line is, all four of us have some sort of addiction in my family. I said my family is perfect, my family, normal childhood, but obviously something went wrong, because all four of us have addiction of some sort or another, you know. So, my sponsor said, if you're having a difficult time with somebody, keep on praying about it. Even if you dislike that person, you don't agree with that person, just keep on praying about it. And hope, you know, there's a good chance that, you know, your relationship will, you know, gain, you know, your friendship or relationship will go back. And that's what it has with my sister. We've been able to point out some things that you think about, when you're drinking and you are involved with a family member or any type of you know, friend or whatever, and they are in the process of dying, you know, there's a lot of things that go through your mind, and as an alcoholic, my sister and I really realize the value of the time that we had with my dad. And she was sharing with me the other day that she came into town from Colorado, and she actually came to the meeting on Friday, and she wanted to share. She didn't realize our meeting was only 45 minutes long. So she told me after that if it wasn't for her recovery, when she was at my parents' house, if she didn't have a recovery, all she would think about is trying to get to the store to get a bottle of something. And in her recovery, she was able to have just valuable time with my parents and with my dad. And that's the way I think about things in my life. The littlest things mean the most to me. My sister gave me a picture of my dad and I when I was 4 years old. We were blowing out our birthday candles. And she gave it to me last Friday. And it wasn't the picture that meant so much. It was the thought process that she was sober, and she thought about it, why she was sober doing it. Her sober hands made that frame with the two pictures. You know, she made some pendants for our girls, a ring that my dad had. She thought about that, why she was sober, and that's what means so much. Like I said, just the littlest things. When I drove and I drank all the time, and when I was a couple years sober, we went up to Three Rivers and we went camping. And I'm coming down the hill to drop off my daughter's friends because they didn't spend the night there. And as I was driving down the hill, the lake was pretty low. Everybody was camping, you know, where the water would usually be. And it's at night, and all these tents are, you know, lit up. And I'm thinking to myself, and I was able to see it with clear eyes. And I thought to myself, man, you know, families are in there having a good time, or people are in there, whatever, having a good time, you know. But they're in there, and there's probably laughter and everything. If I was drinking, I wouldn't have noticed something like that. You know, I would have just been driving down that hill, just hurrying up to get wherever I needed to get to probably refill my bottle of water full of, you know, for vodka. So I just, like I said, the littlest things mean the world to me. When my daughter, when I was going in and out of these rooms still, at this time my daughter was around 10 or 11 years old, and we went to a book study. It was a Saturday book study. And I went to the bathroom, and I came out. She stayed there during the meeting, and I came back from the restroom and proceeded to, you know, study the book. Went home, and a couple days later, I was going through my book, and inside my book, she wrote why I was in the bathroom. We love you, but we don't like the choices you made, but all the family loves you. And that's coming from a little kid, that we think that we're not harming anybody else except for ourselves, but we're harming everybody around us that we touch. You know, you know, today was a difficult day for me, because my dad would be usually the first one that would be calling me in the morning to wish me, you know, congratulations, and he didn't. And the sister that we weren't getting along with for a while, she was the next person that, you know, texts me. And she said some nice things. And then I usually have I have another sister that would usually acknowledge my birthday. And she's in the disease, and I haven't heard from her. And in this program, my mom says that things happen for a reason. I think I became an alcoholic so I could be the person I am today, which is a better person than if I wasn't in recovery, because people that have touched my life, they're better for being sober and clean. This program has taught me my boundaries, and I can't help anybody that can't help themselves. And I would be constantly dwelling over her not calling me today if it wasn't for, you know, people that's given me advice that I've talked to today has really helped me. So I've been jumping around, and my mind is, I apologize if I've been jumping around and my mind is not completely here today. I was actually going to have to cancel at the last minute yesterday because my husband's having surgery. It was going to be today, but long story short, we made it happen because my husband said that I needed to be here. You know, and I shared with a couple other people that I just I didn't know how I was going to be emotionally to speak and to share because of my dad. My sister, when she texted me this morning, I was bawling to my morning meeting this morning because of the text message. And I thought, God, I'm not going to be able to make this. I'm not going to be able to do the speaker meeting tonight, you know. And I heard a long time ago from somebody, when you don't want to be at a meeting is when you need to be at the meeting, you know. I can't wait to give this chip to my mom. That's who I'm giving it to. And I have a chip that I have a clock that my parents gave me a few years back that it's similar to that clock back there. And it doesn't work. It hasn't worked for years. It costs more money to fix it than the clock's worth. My grandmother had given it to my parents for an anniversary. And I told my parents I wanted it. And I use that as my sobriety clock. And the small hands are the years, and the big hands are the months. And I haven't changed it yet today, but I can't wait to go home and change it to straight up 12 and 12. And next year I'm going to have to modify. I'm going to have to modify the face of the clock next year when I reach 13 years. But I'm not going to reach 13 years if I change anything that I do on a daily basis right now. You know, I thank God for my recovery. Counselor at New Visions, I used to use the word lucky a lot, and she says, Kim, you're not lucky, you're blessed. And that's what I try to remember on a daily basis, that I am blessed, and I am no longer stuck in the body that I was a prisoner, because I was a prisoner in my own skin. I am no longer a prisoner. So I want to thank Bill for again pushing me to do something that I'm not comfortable at doing. I could share at a morning meeting, no problem. I know all those faces. I'll leave you with this. You know, my husband and I, we're not, you know, big, you know, going to spend a lot of money on dinners and everything. Let's go to Chili's, you know, that's our go-to restaurant. And my husband enjoys his beer. And when I was new in recovery, he wasn't drinking for a while. And then he would, you know, we would go to Chili's and he would, you know, have a, at first he would just have a regular size beer and he would drink the whole beer. And then if he would have to get up to go to the restroom, then he would get up with the beer empty, right? And then he moved up to his tall Coors Light. And then he would, you know, eventually, you know, he would drink all that, and then he would, you know, get up again to go to the restroom. This is over a period of time. And after a while, he would, and I would be sitting across from him on the bench at a booth, and sometimes our daughters would be there, sometimes not. And then eventually he would order his tall Coors Light and he would take a couple sips and he would then go to the restroom. And the beer would just be sitting there looking straight at me. Nobody's around, you know. I don't see any of you at Chili, so you're not going to narc on me or whatever, you know. And so it would just be sitting there. And I would think to myself, if I take a sip, it's only going to be a sip. He's not going to know. He's not going to know, you know. And then when he goes to the bathroom again after he orders another one, he's not going to know. But eventually he would find out. And that bench, that booth, that chair or whatever on across from me would no longer have my husband sitting there. He would be gone. He would be out of my life because he would not tolerate me drinking anymore. He would be done. And my girls wouldn't want to do anything, you know, have anything to do with me. But if I would just leave that beer there and not take a sip of it, he would come back. We would enjoy our dinner. We would come home and we would probably watch a movie from Redbox or something. And then our next day, you know, next day would just be a normal next day, you know. And that's the way that I live my life now. That, like I said, that first beer was. First sip would get me drunk because I would go home and I would probably figure out how to get some more, you know, because it wouldn't be my last. And I am definitely not ashamed of being a recovering alcoholic. And my daughters that are now 24 and almost 28 are no longer, they're not ashamed of me at all. They don't mind if I'm standing in front of, you know, the Alano Club and they honk their horn while they're driving to school back, you know, years ago. And today I'm able to, you know, witness them going through college, graduating college, both full time, you know, working great jobs. Another one, my oldest daughter, we've been asked by her boyfriend. My oldest daughter is going to be asked, you know, she's going to be engaged October 3rd. She's going to get engaged. We know exactly the date. And I get to participate in those type of things today. I get to do those things. And the promises do come true. Again, as long as I don't take that sip sitting at Chili's. Thanks for letting me share.